Welcome to another ABC Radio National podcast. For more information, go to abc.net.au/rn.
Was Jesus fact or fiction? That's the surprising question that The Christ Files, a new documentary on Jesus, begins with. Hello, I'm Rachel Kahn, and this is The Ark on ABC Radio National. I would have thought that Jesus' existence was not in dispute, but John Dixon, creator of a four-part documentary on Jesus, discovered that some people he surveyed weren't sure, and a cottage industry of books on the real Jesus, quote-unquote, have done much to undermine the New Testament account of who he was. But why is history so important in matters of Christian faith?
Christianity has always made historical claims, and as soon as you say that something amazing took place in history, clever people are going to ask you historical questions. It's in the nature of it. It would be different if Christians just talked about the soul and about ethics. It's a little hard to verify those kinds of claims. But when you say there was this teacher, he lived, he healed, he died on a public cross, and people were meant to have seen him alive from the dead, clever people think, hang on, how do you know that? There's something inherent to Christianity, it seems to me, that drives historical curiosity. The Dan Browns of the world rode that wave in a spectacular way, and since then we've had a raft of similarly highly sceptical sensationalist claims about Jesus. But I think it is in the nature of things in Christianity to attract that sort of scepticism.
Well, you certainly marshal some formidable scholars to shore up the view that the New Testament is a reliable source for history. One of the key arguments against the Gospels is that they were written decades after Jesus died. Now, how does that stack up to other sources in the ancient world that are accepted as reliable history for their stories?
Well, you could have a couple of religious examples, like the earliest writings of Siddhartha Gautama, the Buddha, appeared 350 years after the Buddha's death. But still, we think that there's a lot of oral tradition that survived in the earliest Buddhist scriptures. The earliest biography of Muhammad is about 125 years after his death. This is the famous Sirah. So when you start looking at the Gospels and the letters of Paul, you've got a gap of between 20 years and 70 years after the death of Jesus. So it's pretty good by comparison. If you look at a classic secular example, the great Roman chronicler Tacitus, who's the one who tells us most of what we know about Augustus or Nero or Caligula, all those people we heard at high school, we get our information from Tacitus. But he wrote 77 years after the death of, say, Tiberius, who was alive in Jesus' day. But we still take that as a reliable source. And the reason is all of these ancient texts used prior sources in the writing of their histories. The Gospels did the same, actually.
And many of those Roman sources actually also attest to the existence of Jesus, don't they?
They do. So there's some vague references in, say, Pliny the Younger, who writes about the Christians worshipping Jesus as a god. That's a very interesting statement from AD 110, long before the Nicene Council and the controversies over Jesus' divinity. More importantly, you've got Tacitus, who refers to Jesus in his famous Annals of Imperial Rome, but castigates Jesus as the founder of this deadly superstition that broke out in Judea but made its way to Rome, where all things hideous become popular. So it's a lovely reference. I quite like reading that one out. But then you have Jewish writers as well, like Josephus, who's a first century Jew who had plenty of time in Galilee, and he mentions Jesus on two occasions in his writings.
Well, the other argument one hears a lot is that, in fact, there were a lot of Gospels, and the four that made it into the New Testament were chosen somewhat later by the church. But do we really know much about all the other Gospels that were supposed to have been around?
It's a very active area of scholarship, that's for sure, and has been for about 20 years, certainly since the great Gnostic collection, the Nag Hammadi collection, was found in Egypt, now stored at the Coptic Museum of Cairo. People have been studying these extra Gospels, but very few historical Jesus scholars take the Gnostic Gospels as sources for the historical Jesus. They mainly study them for what it tells us about the diversity of Christianity in the 2nd century and the 3rd century. Perhaps the only Gnostic Gospel that mainstream scholars think has preserved some sayings of Jesus is the Gospel of Thomas. It's undoubtedly the earliest of the Gnostic Gospels, probably to the very early 2nd century is where we can date it. And there are probably half a dozen sayings out of the 114 sayings in the Gospel of Thomas that most scholars think may well have come from Jesus.
And are they the same sayings that one finds in the Q source, the Quelle source, the saying source that has been so important for New Testament scholars when they're examining the four Gospels?
There's certainly a similar genre. So when you line up what we think was in Q, the material common to Matthew and Luke, against the Gospel of Thomas, it's similar in the presenting of aphorisms, proverbial sayings. But not much content that's in Q ended up in the Gospel of Thomas. So there isn't much crossover. There's a little bit. But these five sayings I'm referring to, the five or six sayings, are sayings that don't appear in any of the earlier Christian sources, the Synoptic Gospels, but have the ring of the Synoptic Gospels about them, have the ring of what you find in Luke, Matthew, and Mark. And so for that reason, scholars think, actually, these may well have come from the historical Jesus, were preserved in oral tradition, but didn't end up in the Gospels, ended up in this interesting Gospel of Thomas.
Well, of course, the earliest source in the New Testament is actually Paul, but he doesn't seem to have had the Gospels before him. Is there any suggestion that he could have influenced in any way the Gospels?
It used to be argued, I'm thinking of the great German scholar Willy Marxen, who tried to argue for a time anyway, that Paul had influenced the Gospel of Mark. But scholarship in the last 20 years has really turned away from that thesis, because when you read Mark, it is so different from reading Paul in theology. So if Paul had a big influence on Mark, it wasn't a very successful one. So no, the consensus of scholarship today is that Paul clearly wrote his letters before the Gospels were written, and the Gospels were written in complete ignorance of the letters of Paul, which historically is easy to imagine, because Paul wrote these letters and sent them off to Corinth or to Ephesus or to Rome. It's not as if anyone was thinking, oh, let's make, you know, several hundred copies and send it to all the churches. So when Luke sat down to write his gospel, it is almost certain he didn't have any access to any Pauline letter. And yet what is interesting is there are a few occasions when there are strong verbal similarities at some points.
What about theological, though? I mean, Paul, in a sense, comes up with a creed, doesn't he?
Yeah, there are several creeds in the New Testament, and there's one creed that is very important, and we focus on this in the Christ Files. It's found in 1 Corinthians 15, verses 3 to 5. The consensus of scholarship is that this is not a Pauline invention. The language is very different from Paul's own language, and it has very clear Aramaic substratum, to use the technical language. Underneath the Greek in which it's written, you can tell it was composed in an Aramaic or Semitic form. And it basically says, Christ died for our sins according to the scriptures, he was buried, he was raised to life on the third day according to the scriptures, and he appeared to Peter and then to the 12. End of creed. Paul says that this creed was not only given by him to the Corinthians when he brought them to faith, but that he himself had received it at his own conversion. Now, this is fascinating, because this casts us right back into the middle of the 30s AD. So here is a little summary of the Christian faith that was in use in the mid-30s, which said Jesus is Christos, Messiah, he died, he rose again.
Well, I must commend you for the Christ Files, because these are complicated source questions, a real puzzle, and yet the documentary is very fast-paced. And you even use young people to demonstrate a point, such as the power of the oral tradition over the written tradition. Can you explain what you did there?
We got a bunch of Cambridge's finest in the beautiful ancient round church in Cambridge, and taught one group Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me, and taught another group Blind to the First Group, an ancient Greek phrase, en arche, en ho logos, kai ho logos, proston theon, that comes from the New Testament. Now, of course, they didn't know Greek, and we got the groups to pass it down the line and to see if over a period they could pass it on accurately without any help from me. The group that passed on Amazing Grace did it perfectly. The group that passed on the Greek phrase struggled. It took about three times longer to get to the end of the line. Now, on one level, it was an unfair experiment. But what it does demonstrate is that when something has a mnemonic structure, a rhythm, a poetry, and that is significant to you, it's easy to pass on. When something is foreign to you, doesn't have any memorable structure, it's very difficult to pass on. It illustrates what is a fundamental point of early Christianity scholarship, and that is the first Christians passed on the oral traditions about Jesus in a mnemonic way, in a way devised for memorization. That, in a sense, closes the gap between Jesus and the first writings about him. It's not as if they just invented the stories 20 years after his death. They were passing it on in the most reliable way they knew how, oral tradition.
John, the thrust of the Christ Files is that the Jesus of history is not a no-go area for Christians and that he's well attested by the sources. But you don't go too far into the story. Someone watching the Christ Files, for example, might think that Geza Vermes believed that the Gospels were reliable history, when in fact he's argued that the details of Jesus' life were strongly colored by weaving in the Moses story, the Exodus story, into his life in a way that would make sense to the early followers of Jesus who knew the Hebrew Bible.
You put your finger on something very important. The Christ Files is not really about what we know about Jesus. It's how we know about Jesus. So it's self-consciously about the sources and methods historians use to access the information, which is why we went to Geza Vermes and Adolfo Reutemann and lots of non-Christian scholars in this program, because we're not trying to push a particular narrative about Jesus, but simply demonstrate that historians of Geza Vermes's standing are still taking this very seriously. I am not, as a historian, trying to prove the Jesus story. I don't think it's possible. And I certainly wouldn't defend every detail of the Jesus story historically. But what is very clear is that historians like Vermes and Hengel in Germany and James Charlesworth at Princeton take this stuff more seriously than the general public realizes. And I think that's enough to put in a documentary for people.
Indeed, and it makes a very exciting part of our Western culture that so many scholars, for example, the Bishop Tom Wright of Durham, who is both an ecclesiastical authority as well as a scholar, who looks at how the early Christians understood the story of Jesus within this really deeply Jewish primary setting.
Well, Tom Wright is a very interesting person. I mean, being the Bishop of Durham is no guarantee of Christian orthodoxy. There's a very famous previous Bishop of Durham who came out publicly saying the resurrection didn't happen. But why we interviewed him is that he is an expert on how the Old Testament not only shaped Jesus himself, but how it shaped the way the early Christians told the Jesus story. So it was very important to give someone who is an expert in both Old and New Testament a voice in this documentary.
And it's contrary to some of the arguments about Jesus that he was, in fact, raised in a highly pagan setting and was really much more of an Egyptian magician.
Yes, indeed. That view of Jesus can no longer be spoken about with a straight face in scholarship, which is why we pulled in Sean Frayne, Professor Sean Frayne, who's one of the leading Galilee scholars in the world. And he was in Galilee when we were in Galilee. And so he showed us around. It's deceiving when you look at a town like Sepphoris or even Capernaum, towns in Jesus' neck of the woods. On the surface, they look Greco-Roman. They look pagan. And some scholars took that and ran with it and said, aha, Jesus was influenced by pagan philosophy, not Jewish philosophy. But once you scratch beneath the veneer, it's very clear these towns were profoundly Jewish. There are ritual baths everywhere, limestone bowls, which tell you they were interested in purity, and pig bones are nowhere to be found. And that is the giveaway. These were thoroughly Jewish towns, and Jesus grew up in a thoroughly Jewish environment.
John, making the Christ Files looks like it was a plum job. I was very envious. Are you planning a second series? Are you going to take on the Jesus tomb?
I don't think I want to give it that much credibility, but it was. I was a kid in a candy store every day. I couldn't believe. I woke up one morning, I'm interviewing Geza Vermes today. I woke up the next, I'm interviewing Martin Hengel today. It was incredible. And I do have plans for more. If the Christ Files is about how we know what we know, I want to do a documentary just called The Life of Jesus about what historians are saying we know about Jesus, so the narrative of his life.
John Dixon is the director of the Center for Public Christianity in Sydney, and you can check out the Christ Files website at www.thechristfiles.com.au. Next week, the king whose conversion to Buddhism changed Indian history, King Ashoka, on the Ark with me, Rachel Kahn. And tonight, join me again for a special Easter Sunday program with the Orthodox churches. Yes, there are several of them, and they've got something to offer the Western Church on The Spirit of Things tonight at 6.
You've been listening to another ABC Radio National podcast. ABC Radio National, on air and online, with many of our programs available as podcasts or MP3 downloads. All the details at abc.net.au/rn/podcast.